Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Lee Doherty Ross, who, along with her husband Gerald Ross, are the co-founders of Artist Series Concerts of Sarasota. Lee has made her life and her living with the art of music, beginning as a pianist, moving to become a singer. Lee has spent her entire professional life playing the piano, singing gloriously, teaching music, and creating soirees which evolved into the Artist Series Concerts. Every place that she has lived, she has brought beautiful music. Listen to how this evolved. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From
that you heard beginning the show is that of the woman who I interviewed for the show today, and that, as I said in the run-up, is Lee Daugherty Ross, pianist, obviously, and glorious soprano. In just a little while, I will be playing an example of Lee singing and her interview. And later in the show, I will play more of Lee singing and also more of her playing. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. It's clear to me as a psychotherapist that many too many of us are demonstrating a person that is a version of ourselves, the truth about ourselves usually, but not the whole truth about ourselves. Many too many of us have had experiences in our early lives which forced us to abandon, pretend, deny, ignore aspects of ourselves. This happens quite frequently in our family of origin. If you had parents who didn't like noisy kids, who told you some version of children are to be seen and not heard, and they can do it in all kinds of ways. They can do it by yelling at you. They can do it by rolling their eyes. They can do it by ignoring you or neglecting you. But children who have disappointed or annoyed or angered their parents are in no doubt that this behavior, whatever it was, is not okay. So let's say you were basically a pretty exuberant, noisy child, but you had parents who, for whatever reason, didn't like that. Very soon you learned that that exuberance was going to bring a response that you didn't like. It was not going to bring affection, interest, curiosity, fondness, encouragement, which is what all children need. And children are extremely flexible, and once you got it, and maybe it took a few times, maybe it took a lot, I don't know, depending on how stubborn you were, and it did, in addition to exuberant, but once you got it, in order to please that parent, it is likely that you began to put a governor on just how exuberant you were in the presence of that parent, just how much noise you made. And slowly but surely, as you diminished that response, you may very well have forgotten that you had the capacity to be exuberant, to be noisy, to be spontaneous. So you come into adulthood demonstrating as a rather controlled, rather maybe shy, maybe critical of noise yourself, person. This may not seem like a big deal. Okay, so you're not exuberant, so you don't laugh out loud, so you don't have spontaneous outbursts. But those behaviors which we pretend not to have, deny, and forget, they don't actually go away. In my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, I say that the person that you're now demonstrating, the shy or controlled or reticent person, that's a cover story. Of course, it is true of you. You can do that. It is real. But the cover story suggests that that's all there is to you. And in fact, undercover, safely hidden, is your capacity for exuberance. Again, you may think that it's no big deal to go through life without exuberance. But not only is that quality hidden, we all know when we're not demonstrating our whole self. We know that there's something slightly wrong. And when you've had to deny a quality like exuberance, one of two things happens. Either you find it ugly in others and you criticize them. This is what is meant by if you spot it, you got it. You find yourself really critical of somebody who laughs out loud, doesn't seem to have a governor on their expression, is very noisy, and you think that is just ugly and terrible and awful, well, the chances are good that you spotted it, so you probably got it, which means it's undercover in your psyche. But another way it can go is jealousy. Ooh, I'd like to be able to do that. Either one of those things is not that good for you. Both of those things make you feel bad. And so the Lin Show is about saying that if this resonates with you in any way, if there's a quality that you admire, envy, are jealous of, or are hypercritical of and really think this it's just awful, 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 and maybe you think that it might be true of you, but you can't get access to it. So I'm here to tell you that it may not be impossible to get access to the things you might have had to hide in your childhood. And it's not just the family of origin that discourages us. There are lots of opportunities in childhood to be discouraged. So if you're interested in thinking about this, talking about this, looking into this, this is what psychotherapy is about. And if you want to talk to me about that, you want to ask me how one knows if one has hidden a quality, or if you actually know that maybe there's an activity or a behavior or a skill that you really would like to have but can't seem to take the risk to try and get, it's all the same thing. And if you'd like to talk to me about that, you can reach me at my website. It is thelinshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E-S-H-O-W. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelinshow.com. There's an email tag. You can click on that and write me anything you'd like, a question, a statement, an idea. You can get a copy of the book. You can listen to the first chapter of the book. I'm reading it up there. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization, and you can listen to all the shows I've ever done, including this one. In my shows, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are, to experience what psychotherapists call congruence. What you hear is what there is. And my interview today is a demonstration of that. Lee understood at 7 that she was drawn to the piano. And she let her mother know that, and that was the beginning of a lifetime of beautiful music like that which you just heard. And then, having sort of spontaneously taken voice lessons, she discovered yet another passion. I'm going to let Lee tell you how that all evolved. And as I said in the run-up, I'm going to play more of her music. So now, hear of Lee singing, followed by my interview with her.
If I love you, time and again, I let my guard
I am here with Lee Dougherty Ross, who is the co-founder of Artist Series Concerts of Sarasota.
That is right, and I'm so happy to meet you.
Me too. Me too.
What a joy.
Thank you. So I'm explaining to Lee that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that the art to which you have given your life and made your living is the art of music. Would that be accurate?
You are absolutely right. I guess I would say ever since I came into this world, I was hearing my mom play the piano, mm-hmm. my dad playing the harmonica, and shortly thereafter my brother playing the trumpet. And so then I began playing the piano when I was about 7, I would
say.
Okay,
so you just answered my only question.
Okay.
I have only one question, and it is, do you remember the beginning, the first time?
I do.
Tell me.
I do. I can remember sitting in the living room working a puzzle, watching my mother give lessons or, you know, just kind of advise my brother with piano.
How old did you
be? When I was 7, right. and he was 3 years older than I, and I said, ooh, I think I would really like to play the piano. So my mom, bless her heart, said, well, let's do that, and the good fortune is there was a magnificent piano teacher named Frances Marsh Bunton, with whom I studied until I went to college.
Oh, my goodness.
So she was a big influence on my life. She was a magnificent woman and a beautiful teacher. And she would bring all her students together for recitals, and she gave theory classes, and it was a really wonderful time.
Okay, so before you were 7, you heard all this music,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody
mm-hmm.
playing something,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't make the leap. You didn't say, "I would want to do that." Until that moment,
that's the time I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the time I remember.
Do you remember
saying
what
it
was about?
Well, he was practicing with my mom. He was playing the piano, and I just said, "Oh, I like that. I got to do that."
So was he taking lessons with the same teacher?
No, I don't remember with whom he was studying, but he was working with my mom, and there we were in the living room. Yep.
Yeah, right. So did you ever work with your mom, or you worked?
Oh, well, she would be in the kitchen while I'd be practicing, and she would say, Nellie, you might want to do that over.
I really
know. Oh, yeah. Darling, she was lovely, and I have happy, happy memories of, for example, Christmas Eve, where a lot of her friends would come over, and she would play the piano, and we would all sing Christmas carols. And it was a lovely time, lovely, lovely time. And that being the case, I've done it every year that I can remember since that time, getting people over to sing Christmas carols.
So,
sure.
So there's been music since the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm so thankful for that. The teacher with whom I was studying, as I mentioned, Frances Marsh Bunton, would bring other people from around the country to give us lessons. And she brought in a wonderful teacher, Austin Conradi from Peabody. And then I can remember every year we would have a competition where we got judged, and you would get superiors or less than superior. And there was one judge that said, when she came out, it was my junior year, I guess, and she said, you must come out to North Texas State College and study with Silvio Scionti. Well, I had never been west of the state of Virginia, but so going to Texas, North Texas State College was, wow, really? But it turned out he was wonderful.
Oh, wait, you got ahead of me.
Too fast. Okay.
You got ahead of me.
All right.
So you start playing at 7,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes significant passion, the thing you're going to do, is that you always know that,
mm-hmm.
or are you just enjoying this and thinking I might do anything else, or do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think at that time I thought playing the piano would be something I would do for the rest of my life. Whether or not it would be a huge concert career, I'm not sure. I did have the opportunity to play with a symphony when I was quite young there. Before I took off for college, I played a Mozart concerto with a Norfolk symphony, which
well,
was...
Wait. So you knew that you were going to make music your life, that you were going to try to make a living with music, or you didn't?
I mean, it's one thing. I'm not so sure I really thought to myself, am I going to make a living doing this? I just knew that I wanted to make the most beautiful music I knew how to make.
Yeah.
And learn as much about it, and I was willing to put in the dues, willing to put in the hours to practice, you know, so...
Did your parents
work as musicians, or they simply played?
No, she played the piano. She, as a matter of fact, she was an accompanist in a vocal studio. She herself had a lovely coloratura voice, but she did not like that repertoire, so she decided she would play the piano in a vocal studio instead.
Wow.
So that's what she did for a while.
What I'm trying to discover is, well, let's just take you through it. So you're playing, and it's the most significant thing about your childhood.
Yeah, but I must admit, I had a fabulous childhood. I also loved sailing.
Ah.
I was the international women's moth champion.
Wow.
Sailing a little 11-foot sailboat, and I loved being in a chorus at school, singing madrigals and singing in a choir, and, you know, I was a cheerleader at school. I had a very normal kind of life.
Yeah, well, you just brought up the singing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when did you start to sing, or did you study?
Yeah, well, that was interesting, too. I think life has its turns, doesn't it? I went, in the summertime, I went to Chautauqua to study, and I studied with a wonderful pianist there, but at the same time I also studied voice there with a magnificent gentleman named Julius Hune, and he was singing, he had sung at the Metropolitan Opera, and he must have stood about 6 foot 6 inches tall and was huge and had a voice like God, and he said, "My darling, you must come to Eastman to sing."
Everybody is telling you, you must come somewhere.
Yeah. So, you know, after I had spent 3 years at North Texas State as
Wait. Because I'm losing the chronology.
Okay.
Well, no, I am.
Okay.
So, when did you start singing?
Well,
then? You didn't start singing until after college?
Well, hang on just a moment.
Yeah.
I sang just as a chorister in school, in high school.
Right.
And then when I went out to North Texas to study piano ostensibly, I also took voice lessons just to enjoy. And then it was the summer that I went to Chautauqua that I met this gentleman, Mr. Hune, who said, "You must come to Eastman." I can remember writing to my friends at North Texas saying, "I'm not quite sure. Here I am leaving school before they graduate there, but I'm going to go to Eastman and study voice as well as piano."
Really?
So, yeah.
So you left school?
I left North Texas before I had graduated in order to go to Eastman to graduate as a voice and piano major. I had a double major. Which actually was rather unusual. I got a performer's certificate in both singing and piano and had the opportunity to sing with the Eastman Rochester and play the piano with the Eastman Rochester. I played the Rachmaninoff second with the Eastman Rochester, and I sang a work by Dominic Argento called Ode to the West Wind.
Interesting about this is that apparently you didn't have aspirations as a singer.
No.
You were simply taking lessons because you liked
it. At North Texas I was, yeah.
Yes, right.
And then once...
And then the Chautauqua thing, it's just more of a, well, that's nice, I'll just take more voice lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out to be your work, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So, at some point, did you say to yourself, well, this is clearly what I'm going to do?
Exactly. I can remember saying to the piano teacher, who, by the way, was Cecile Genhardt, a magnificent woman, and I can remember telling her, "I've made the decision that I want to make singing my career rather than piano." And her response was, "Make me a promise." She says, "Just keep practicing Bach fugues so that you're mine." So that you keep, you know, intellectually aware in that way. So, and then I got a Fulbright to go to Germany to sing.
Oh, my God.
So, yes.
So, do you remember the process? It's a leap, right? All your life, you're a pianist. And then sort of, because it feels like a good thing to do, because it's pleasant, because you like it, you study voice. And then at some point, you recognize that singing is...
where I wanted to go.
Right.
Well, I love poetry, I love the text. And what was interesting is, you know, as a pianist, you are spending many, many hours in the practice room by yourself, boom, really working on it, which is
which is imperative. You have to do it. As a singer, you spend many, many hours, but you're also often with other people rehearsing and this and that. And when you sing concerts, you have all this variety of poetry that you're bringing forth, and you're also seeing people in the audience. For example, not only did I love singing recitals of very classical music, but I've also had the joy of singing with orchestras of popular music. And there you are singing Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe, and you're seeing these people in the audience, smiles on their faces, and what's not to love about that? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I feel very thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting, it's interesting because, well, for me, it's interesting because however passionate you were about the piano, mm-hmm. you discovered this other thing that was even more compelling. Mm-hmm. That is the ability to speak the words and to have an impact on the audience, which you may have when you're playing, but you don't see it.
There's truth to that. Yeah, you feel it. Yeah, you mm-hmm. feel it. That's absolutely right. Yeah, but I'm so thankful that I have been able to continue to use the piano, because now it's my decision not to be singing anymore at this point, but to accompany singers or violinists or that. And I have great joy in playing the piano for people to make music.
And so that teacher,
and that's what I'm doing a lot right now.
And so that teacher was right that you continue to.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
She was right. That was right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so tell us about your career. So you graduate from, you get a Fulbright, mm-hmm. right?
Which was a wonderful experience. I had a year there in Cologne, Germany. A very important thing for singers in order to learn the language as a real language is you spoke it and you knew what the words were, so that when I'd be singing a Schubert song, I really understood, you know, what was going on in that. And that was very important. And that was a very valuable year. But then I came back.
So are you saying that you studied German?
Well, I lived there, so
right. So you had to
I was studying German. I was studying voice, and you know, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, singing opera there, and recitals there. Sure. And then it was interesting though, because then I came back. As it turned out, I went on a tour with Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians.
Oh my!
So, and that was quite a change from Germany. You know, singing a different place around the country every night. Getting on the bus in the morning and riding all day and then singing that night and met some wonderful people. I did that for 3 months. And then when the tour was over back in New York, I was in New York and I saw the newspaper that was advertising Broadway shows. And I looked in the newspaper and, they were having an advertisement to go audition for My Fair Lady. Uh-huh. So I said, why not? I'll just go give it a try. And good fortune, I probably fit the costume of the person that was leaving. And so I spent quite a while in My Fair Lady on Broadway. It was not the Julie Andrews. Margot Moser was then the
star.
Uh-huh, the mm-hmm. star of the show, uh-huh, Eliza. Mm-hmm. So that was another wonderful experience. So I was doing that while taking lessons during the day.
Voice
lessons with Rose Bampton, who was then a magnificent opera singer and a lovely person.
So you continued to study?
Oh, yeah, for years after that, because I didn't stay in My Fair Lady that long. I ended up having family, giving birth to two magnificent little ladybugs, girls, and continued to do concerts. I had won some competitions that enabled me to do concerts around the states, and also.
And during this time, you're still living in New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Spent 10 wonderful years in New York. There was a wonderful organization there called the Affiliate Artists, and if you were an affiliate artist, you had 60 days. 6 visits where you would go to a college, a particular college, and spend time doing anything you could do musically to be helpful. I was sent out to Carthage College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, of all places. It turned out to be a wonderful experience, though. But you would go into, for example, you go into a French class, and you'd sing songs about French. You'd go into before a football team, and you would talk about the discipline of the body. I would go to a Sears store and set up with a guitarist, for example, in front of where they were selling shoes, and we would sing. I'd go into a bank and sing something.
Oh, my God.
And we called it Music Where You Are.
Yeah, you're spreading the art.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're raising consciousness
yeah.
about the art. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it was a wonderful organization. Went on for quite some while. The interesting thing is the person who is the board chair of Artist Series Concerts, here and now, not only did he go to North Texas State College when I was there, we were in the same choir together, but he was one of the administrators of the affiliate artist program.
Wow.
And now here he is in Sarasota, Florida. Ed Alley is his name.
Wow.
Married to the lovely June LaBelle. So, yeah, life just has its wonderful
adventures. Well, all right. So 10 years in New York,
mm-hmm.
Two children later,
mm-hmm.
then what happens?
Well, my ex-husband then decided, because he also was an affiliate artist playing flute and saxophone, Johnson Wax Foundation convinced him that he should go out and help bring jazz to the people of Racine, Wisconsin. They were having difficulties with their various ethnic backgrounds, and Johnson Foundation people thought that his bringing jazz would perhaps calm things down. Well,
wow.
I was not exactly excited about moving to Racine, Wisconsin with the career that I was having going, because
right.
I was singing in Alice Tully Hall, I sang at Carnegie Hall, you know, various places like that. And that was really fun. And to go to Racine, Wisconsin, you know, but I could hear my mother's voice saying, you know, from the Bible, whither
right?
thou goest, I will go. And I'm like, I don't want to go. But things work out. Things work out as they should. And so anyway, I got a job teaching at Wisconsin University in Parkside, teaching voice, and continuing to do lots of concerts.
And he's playing jazz wherever he could.
He
or he's
did a little
together.
Bit, and then that kind of wore old for him, so he moved back to New York, and I became head of the voice department at Wisconsin Conservatory of Music, which was wonderful.
So I just want to stop you and say, this is that irony. He has to go to Racine. You don't want to go to Racine.
That's it.
So you wind up in Wisconsin. He figures out he doesn't want it, but it works out great for you.
Well, yes, of course, it did work out great for me. You know, that's jazz people are improvisational.
Yeah.
And that kind of is the way of life for them. But anyway, so things work out beautifully. And so, as I say, I was teaching at the conservatory, and this wonderful man named Gerald Ross was on the board, and the president of the conservatory had a dinner and said, can you come over for dinner, Lee? Sure. And of course, I love to go out for dinner. And I was seated next to Gerald Ross, who is now my husband of 37 years.
Right. Don't take me to Wisconsin. Don't take me to Wisconsin. Oh, okay, fine.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I feel so blessed. I feel so fortunate not only to have been able to sing and make music, but to have a really blessed life with a beautiful husband, beautiful children. He has 6 children.
Wow.
So we have 8 children together and 12 grandchildren and 7 great-grandbabies. There you go.
Wow. Wow. Well, okay, so how did you wind up in Sarasota?
We were living in Wisconsin. Thanks to my being at Parkside and then the conservatory. We were living in Wisconsin. And he felt like time had come to check out Florida, check out somewhere where it'd be warmer, mm-hmm. as opposed to shoveling snow.
Mm-hmm.
So he went west and found that wasn't particularly good. And then he drove around down in Florida. He went on the east coast, and then came around to the west coast and said, "Oh yeah, we were looking for good weather, for tennis, golf, the beach, sunshine, and most of all, music. And Sarasota is the perfect place."
And how long ago was that?
So that was, oh gosh, it's 20 years now, because
okay.
we started Artist Series Concerts the year we moved down.
So tell me about that.
Well, we lived in a wonderful condominium on Lido Beach, and because we had done soirees in our home up in Wisconsin where either, you know, my students would sing or some of my colleagues with whom I worked would sing or play or whatever, and people would come over and have a wonderful time making music. And so when we came down here, we said, why not do that here? So the first concert in our condo, I sang and played the piano for the folks, and they seemed to enjoy it. And then I brought another of my colleagues down and another of my students. So we had three the first year. And the people there really enjoyed it. And the next year we got more, and the next year we got more. And so then pretty soon Jerry formed a board, and we got a 501c3. And not too long after that, a man in the condominium said, no, we're having too many people here, we have to move. Well, good things happened because of that. And then we moved to David Coyne Hall, and where we had concerts. And then we moved after that to Holly Hall. And then how wonderful that historic Oslo Theater was built and moved and has a magnificent theater. And so we then became the main performing organization that first year that they became into being there. That wonderful building built in 1798 in Oslo, Italy. And there to perform in there is just heaven. It's just heaven. So John Fisher came on board as our executive director, and he's fabulous. And we have a wonderful board that makes it all happen, and so many wonderful supporters. I just can't believe how kind and caring so many people are, and so supportive of good music. We have a friends organization that does wonderful things. They support the artist series in many ways, but also put on a gala to raise funds for our scholarship. And so far, we've given about $275,000 to young musicians. Wow. Which is fabulous, isn't it?
It's fabulous.
It's fabulous. And up until this year, we had been doing local and statewide competitions, but this year we said, let's go national. So we had applicants from 66 singers. This year it was for singing, from 16 different states. And we brought fabulous judges here. George Shirley was one of them. You might know that he won an award from our president for his outstanding work in the arts. And he came over and in this very home where we are at this moment, gave a master class to all the singers that were here. And it was outstanding. And so we gave $6,000 to seven people that had come from Juilliard and Curtis and Manhattan. It was thrilling. And in addition, we have connected with the Sarasota Music Club. This year we did a competition for 10th, 11th, and 12th graders and gave $22,000 to, I'm going to say, seven young people here in town.
Wow.
And it's so important. The lessons are so expensive, and that's part of our mission, is to support these young people, which we do also in another way. We take our artists out to schools, whether they be elementary schools or high schools or even colleges. We take our artists when they come for our programs during the season to the schools, and they do outreach programs. And these programs are so significant. They're so inspiring to these young people. It's amazing the questions they ask and the interest they have. And to watch, for example, a person who's playing a violin or a cello that's made in 1800s, and one of these students comes up and actually plays it, and they're like, oh, you know, it's mind-boggling for them. So I feel like with the 20 years now of putting on our concerts and bringing beautiful music, a real variety. We bring classical pianists, classical singers, trios, string quartets, but we also bring Broadway people, pops concerts, and it's a real variety. Of course, you know, Sarasota is filled with magnificent performances almost every weekend. So, you know, we hope to keep our series and our concerts going for many, many, many years to go, and make them relevant, make them so that they really make a difference in people's hearts and souls.
Yeah. Yep. So this weekend, you're celebrating the 20th anniversary.
We are.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry you have missed it because you're hearing this after it was.
Yeah.
But I'm going to play some music that you would have heard if you had gone.
That's right.
And
yeah.
So that you can know. So when does it start again?
We have all kinds of concerts starting as of October of next season.
Okay. So you
and
give
we're year-round, actually.
Right.
We're
so
pretty much
is there year-round. A website?
Oh, yes.
By all means, give
thank
a website.
www.artistseriesconcerts.org.
Great. And is there a phone number?
Yeah. You can 306-1202, 306-1202. And Donna Fisk is a magnificent executive assistant, and she will make sure that you get tickets for anything we have going. We have soiree series, we have luncheon series, classical and pops. So there's so much to offer.
And starting again next October.
Mm-hmm. October 2nd and 3rd.
Yeah. Okay. So you said that you decided to stop singing. Can
yeah.
you say why?
Well, I'm a little bit, what do they say, long in the tooth? Is that what they say?
Did it just get harder to do?
Well, there are certain parts, I mean, I can still sing things.
I'm sure you can.
I demonstrate sometimes if people come over and want to have like a little warm-up session of that. I demonstrate, sure. But I don't feel that I have the finesse that I would want to have.
Yeah, the body changes and so the voice
yeah.
changes.
And I wouldn't want to do that to people.
Well,
no, I wouldn't want to, no, it would not be representative of what I would want to have.
Yeah,
so,
no, I
so,
understand.
Yeah, I sing the Lord's Prayer with everybody in church on Sunday, but everybody is with me, so they don't hear me individually.
I got it. Okay, I ask one other question.
Please.
And it is simply, having given a life to the work of music, to that art, would you say something about what that was like, what that felt like, what it meant to you?
It's not was, it is.
Yes.
Yeah, and it makes me weep when you say that. I can hardly respond. It's meant the world.
Yes.
It's meant the world. It's what I was born to do.
Yes.
And you know, I've always kind of tried to live by the Bible say, let your light shine so that others can give glory. So my light happens to be music making. So that's what I want to do. That's what I feel I was born to do, and I hope I can continue.
So do we.
until I'm really, really over the hill.
I don't think you'll ever be over the hill. Thank you so much, Lee. This was beautiful.
I appreciate your taking the time.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you, honey.
As I said in the introduction to this show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art so that you can hear what it sounds like when a person is congruent, when they are the person they were meant to be, when they are their real self. And as you can hear, Lee is such a person. And it's not uncommon for me to hear when I ask people who have spent a life giving their life to an art, what they might say about it, that they tear up. Unfortunately, not that many people have the gift of being able to be exactly who they were meant to be their whole self. And those people who have that gift, and people who have given their life to an art have that gift. They know how lucky they are. I hear quite often, I had to sacrifice this, or I didn't get that, or I didn't have the life other people have. But I virtually never hear, I regret it, I wish I hadn't. I always hear the gratitude, the joy, and quite often it expresses itself as it did with Lee in tearing up. So, as I said in the introduction, it is my hope that when you listen to someone like Lee, you are asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Am I living the life that I have so much gratitude for that it makes me teary? Am I living the life that I believe I was meant to live? Am I shining the light that is my light to give to the world? And if the answer is no, if there are ways in which you think you are not living the life you would want to live, the life that would please you so much it would make you teary, then it really may not be too late to recover some of what you have sacrificed, some of what you have lost, to become that person you really were meant to be. And again, if you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. As always, I hope you got something that you can use from this show. Something that you didn't know, which you now know. Something that stimulated something inside of you or inspired you to reach for more of yourself. Maybe it was just that you got an opportunity to listen to some incredibly glorious music. But whatever it is, I hope it's something that will bring you back. Because, as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too. We are going to go out on another example of the glorious Lee Dorothy Ross.
Go in the mist of a day, yeah. Go with a whimper, I'm going
I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten